Welcome to the Spa Girls podcast, the self-publishing podcast for authors. You're in the right place for the best writing, marketing and publishing advice, plus interviews with industry experts and best-selling authors. I'm Cheryl Phipps.
I'm Shah Barrett.
I'm Wendy Vella.
And I'm Trudy J. And we are here with screenwriter, scriptwriter, writer extraordinaire, Catherine Burnett.
Hey, Catherine.
Welcome, Catherine. Welcome back.
So we're going to talk today about procrastination as a writer, and Catherine is awesome because she's got 25 years of experience as a working writer, and she knows how to get to the business of writing and not muck around, which is what we're going to skim her brain for today. I'm not scaring you off or anything here, Catherine.
No.
And this is a third time visit, another third timer on the podcast. But first of all, I'm going to read your bio, actually, before I get too distracted about talking about other things. So Catherine Burnett has been a working writer for over 25 years and truly understands the challenges that come with creative work. She's been a very successful writer for television and film for many years and recently had two of her plays produced, which we'll talk about in a minute when we get to the interview, and has also just published her very first non-fiction book, which also is the topic of what we're going to talk about today. When she's not writing, she runs craft workshops and programs under the Beginner's Guide Writing Workshops umbrella and facilitates an awesome subscription-based group called The Writing Room. So welcome.
Well,
thank you. It is so lovely to be back and to see all your faces. It's so good.
It's been a while.
So last time we had you on was 2017. So first of all, just tell us a little bit about what you've been doing since then and catch us up.
Well, I think let's just do it. I'll just try to do this super speedily. I've been doing quite a bit of cozy crime on TV. I've been writing plays, so I've made a couple of plays produced, which is awesome. I've still been a little bit of teaching, still running the writing room, and of course published this little beauty, which is my nonfiction book on productive writing. And that has been the guts of it. I've done a little tiny bit of travel, and then really it's just been, as everyone has experienced, you know, the pre-COVID, the COVID, the post-COVID, all of that nonsense. Yeah. So, you know, it feels like it's been weirdly busy, but and then you're weirdly just odd. So, yeah, that's in a nutshell, that's what I've been up to.
That's everything in a nutshell. You know, when you talked to us when we were planning this episode about your two plays, and you said that one of the plays was critically successful and one was a box office success. And I just wanted you to kind of explain to us what that means, like what's the difference and how, you know, just talk a bit more about the plays, because I think that's interesting.
Great. So the plays were both produced by Tadpole Productions for the Pump House Theatre in Auckland. And one of them was called The Camper Van, which was, and that was a world premiere satirical farce comedy. And that was practically sold out before it opened, which I thought was so interesting, which is phenomenal and really unusual. Yeah, so that's your box office success. You know, that was brilliant, but kind of shocking, actually. And I wondered whether the timing of it was people were just ready to go and see something fun. You know, I really think that was it. So that was an amazing experience. Next year, which was last year, Tadpole picked up another play of mine that I co-wrote with Nick Ward, which is called Mike and Virginia, and also a comedy. And I love both of these plays. And the box office less so. And I was quite surprised by that because I went, Mike and Virginia is like a romantic comedy about romantic comedy. So I was thinking, this is the people that loved The Camper Van will love Mike and Virginia because it's comedy, there's romance, it's, we made great cast as always. And it was, you know, I've got to be honest, the box office was not amazing. It wasn't terrible, but it was not what I was expecting. But the reviews were unbelievable. So the views for The Camper Van, very good. Views for Mike and Virginia, just insane. Like, honestly, the best reviews I've ever had for anything ever. And went, what is going on? And as one of the publishers said, I really wish that last review had come out, you know, a month ago. So great. So it was just really weird. But I mean, both wonderful. And that's the story with theatre anyway. There's never a guarantee that you're going to get bums on seats. There's all sorts of things that impact on that. But, you know, and as we know, it's so easy to stay inside and watch TV, you know, which is considerably cheaper. But yeah, it was an interesting experience. And I can't say I was unhappy with either. Because obviously The Camper Van success was amazing. But it was just extraordinary getting these reviews. And Micah Virginia, just a little side note, listeners, as I wrote that 12 years ago with Nick Ward, and it got picked up again. So it had been produced before, got picked up again years later. And I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. And it just could not have gone better. It was just terrific.
But don't you think that also kind of mirrors what happens to us as authors as well? You could put the same love into two different books and launch them in similar ways, and you have completely different outcomes.
Yes, it's impossible. The variables, right? They're just all these variables you've got absolutely no control over. And you know, what I like to say to people that I coach or people in my writing room is, you know, a really good thing to think about is when you're looking at your own process and your own productivity and your own inner game, really, as a writer, is what are you bringing to the party? So what is the stuff that you're bringing to it internally? What is the stuff that's getting in the way of you, what you want externally? So you've got no control over the latter. I think it's the challenge for us all, and this is all types of writers, it really is going, how do I deal with the external stuff? Because like, you can't do anything about it or do anything with it. All you can do is respond to it.
And
how you respond to it is how you go forward, isn't it, really?
Cheryl, it's come out of my own mouth. Absolutely right. And it's really, it's just so interesting that you brought up the comparison around books. It's so true. It's just so true. And also, you know, we forget how we don't forget how incredibly subjective all of this art malarkey is, you know, when we're creating something. I mean, honestly, the things that I personally think have been the best things I've ever written often haven't even been made because other people have gone, you know, we'd rather you know, it's really interesting. Or, you know, for you guys, it's like the thing that you love the most doesn't sell brilliantly. Yeah. And I go, it's just a mystery.
Often it's an unexpected book that does really well. Like you kind of go, what is it? And then you try and redo it or do the same thing again. And it's like crickets.
Or Wendy's first book that she got picked up by a publisher and did really well in the second book, which honestly has surpassed that, hasn't it, Wendy? They didn't want it.
Yeah. Wow.
It's like, you know?
Didn't fit the tropes, apparently.
Look, it's just crazy. Why do we do it? I don't know.
It's a whole other subject, right?
It's a whole other podcast. It is such a roller coaster, right? But I think being a writer, and I think being any type of artist for sure, and it definitely comes with its challenges, I think.
Oh, that's awesome. Absolutely. I like how you kind of, you can take the positives out of both those experiences. Do you know what I mean? Like instead of going,
yeah, definitely. Well, I think they were both ultimately really positive, just surprising.
That's important. So, and you've also written a horror story, I hear. So can you tell us about that? Yes,
sure. So, excuse me. So last year I was invited to pop something into remarkable cover right here, Remains to Be Told, which is like a Dark Tales of Aotearoa, which is horror written by a bunch of New Zealand authors. And I wrote a short story for that, and you know, I'm an experienced writer, but I just noticed in myself that when I was sending it to Lee Murray, who's the editor, I just had this little moment as I was hitting send of going, "Oh, what if it's not as good as the other ones, and they don't like it, and they don't want to put it in, and they're going to have that really embarrassing conversation with me about, thought you'd be great, but no."
And I think it's important just actually to repeat that you've been doing this for 25 years, like paying the bills with writing, and you're still thinking that, like,
and I don't think I'm unusual in that.
No, not at all.
Yeah,
totally a miracle to me that anyone reads any of my books, you know.
And it's nuts. As I really want to say, it wasn't like a huge, big, crushing, you know, cloud of doom. It was just this little pernicious thought, you know, that just popped in there. And I went, "What? Well, you've got to send it. It's the deadline. So get over yourself." Which is pretty much what I did. And you know what? They loved it. It was in the book. It was great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's funny how we lose perspective on our own writing. Like, I can read anyone else's writing, go, oh, yeah, this, this, and this, and whatever else. But I read my own, and I'm like, I can't even tell. Like, I don't even know. You can't.
That's what we have editors for, right? Yeah.
But I think that's why what delays, especially new authors, from producing their first book or their second or their third, because you are constantly second guessing it, and you've got to go over it and over it and over it. And, you know, sometimes it's getting past the first chapter because you just want it to be so perfect.
Definitely.
Writing that first book takes ages. It took me probably 2 years to write my first book.
I think mine took me many more years than that.
So this is a really interesting, because we've kind of migrated into kind of talking about procrastination, which is actually or variances of that, which is actually our topic for today. So let's kind of dive right in and go with that. So you've written this book called The Productive Writer Guidebook, which is all about kind of how to actually become a productive writer. And a big part of that, I think, is this idea of procrastination and not actually getting things done, and kind of mindset, which is essentially what we were just talking about.
Definitely. I think the book is really quite sneaky, because it's got lots of questions, provocative questions and tips and thoughts and bits and pieces in it. But really, fundamentally, it's all about how are you getting in your own way? If you're not as productive as you want to be, how much influence has your mindset got in that? And, you know, as we know, a lot. And it's a lot about that. So it's kind of sneaky, because it's about productivity, but really it's about working out how to get out of your own way. And it's interesting, and procrastination, really big part of it. And because it just takes so many forms. And so, you know, when Cheryl, you were talking about the first chapter and wanting it to be perfect, that's just like, you know, that's the red flag. That's like the red flag. It's like perfectionism is just a really gnarly form of procrastination, and very difficult to overcome, because it feels like this is the right thing to do, right? I'm just trying to make myself really good, so how can that be bad? And it's not bad. I sort of hate saying good and bad, but bear with me. That's not bad unless it is, you can't get past your first chapter and never finish your book. And it's only bad for you. I mean, you're the only one who knows, but, you know, if you really want to write your book and get it into the world, then it's not great. So how do you wrestle that to the ground? It's that, but I think there's a whole lot of different ways that we are very sneaky about procrastinating. I also want to say that I used to be, occasionally, very rarely, I'm a terrible procrastinator. Like, I honestly was a shocker. And then, you know, things like deadlines tend to cure you of that. Because just professional pride comes into it, and you're going, I can't possibly not deliver. So there's that. But it's, the pull of the other things is so enticing. Talk about a siren call, you know. So it's really, I really, really have lived and breathed this. And I've honestly done some procrastinating in the past. I honestly, through lockdown, it was really difficult all the time in the world, because I wasn't going anywhere else. Really found myself procrastinating a lot. And I would just get to about 4 o'clock and go, it's 4 o'clock. How have you not started? Like, what have you been doing? It's so crazy. And everyone has got their own little version of procrastinating. Absolutely. But I think the challenge for us all is to go identify, how am I procrastinating? Like, what am I doing? And understanding how we're procrastinating first off, and then dealing with it. So when you think about this is my favorite form of procrastination. It is my personal favorite, but also I see it in other people a lot, which is the non-essential tasks that must be done before the writing starts. And they are just so ridiculously stupid. And then you look at them like in black and white on paper and you go, what is wrong with me?
Or if you're like me, Catherine, you put special washi tape and then you color code.
Tasks,
and then you have to
colour
them in as well. So
right, it's absolutely it's very important task. But the non-urgent, non-essential task before starting writing is just a classic. And you know, depending on who you are and what you like and what you get satisfaction from, folding laundry, you know, doing the garden, cleaning the car, whatever the hell. And it's, you know, what nonsense is that? I mean, really, yeah. And it is nonsense. And I don't say this as a punishing thing. I say it as a, I'm just laughing at myself as much as I just, writers, I know you, I see you. It's like you and I, and I say you and I, all of us, we know full well that what's more important to us is finishing our work and getting it out into the world, right? Mm-hmm. We both know that's more important and meaningful to us as individuals than having a pile of folded laundry. Mm-hmm. Like, we absolutely know that, you know, we really know that.
But I don't know if Cheryl knows that. I feel like Cheryl would prefer to have the laundry folded and also do the writing.
I can do both. I can do both.
That's great.
It took me a while. It took many, many years, but I can do both. Yes.
I think if you've got it worked out that you can go, I can still do the non-essential task and still get the writing done, then all good, power to you, doesn't matter. It's only a problem if you're going, oh, I'll just do that. Oh, then I'll just do that. And then I'll just do that. And then it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
There's an intention behind it, right? Like, Cheryl is an organized, efficient house person machine. And she knows what she's doing, but gets it done. But if you're doing these laundry and other stuff because you're afraid instead to finish the work, or if there's something blocking you, or you're scared you're not good enough, or you're worried that if you get it down and then someone reads it, then, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the key to understanding your own behaviour is to ask yourself the question, why am I not prioritising my writing at the minute, and answering that question, which is, it's kind of a gnarly question. Yeah. You know, it's quite a confronting question to ask yourself. But, you know, why aren't you prioritising your writing at the minute? Could have multiple answers, but you know deep down, you know yourself really. You might have to dig a little bit. What is the real answer? And invariably, it's trying to avoid emotional discomfort of some sort.
Yeah.
And as you hinted at, Trudy, it can be, I'm nervous about finishing because X, Y, and Z is going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm nervous about starting because X, Y, and Z is going to happen. I'm just not really, deep down, I think I'm not really good enough to do this. I think people are going to laugh at me. I mean, the list goes on, and everyone's got their own unique little box of fear, you know. I certainly do, and I know everyone else that I know writes does as well. And I think the challenge to try to get your head around this is just to really answer that question and go, what am I trying to avoid? What am I avoiding by not writing? And this is, honestly, this is so only a problem if you're not writing as much as you'd like to. If you, you know, still getting stuff done, then, you know, who cares what you're doing with your inner game, really? If you're happy with your level of productivity and how often you turn up to your work, then there's that. But those are two quite gnarly questions to answer. But I think they're useful. They're really useful.
Yeah. It's about being honest with yourself, isn't
it? It really is. I think
that's
so
quite hard for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Understanding yourself, understanding why you do things, you know, when you do.
Yes.
No one wants to dig in their own brain, let's be honest.
Oh, no.
Some of us do, to be fair.
Some of us do.
Some of us can. That's a whole other form of procrastination.
Oh, yes.
The 17 courses and the 95 books and
it's really well, actually, the book refers to the people that go to courses all the time and never start. So yeah, absolutely. And funnily enough, somebody who bought this book said to me, oh, I basically, instead of doing my writing, I sat around reading it and answering the questions, which has made me laugh so much. So I went, sorry about that. But the other thing
why
about
my book to procrastinate.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, actually, you didn't see that coming. I'm quite tempted to write because I'm the devil. So, you know, I'm gonna go, if you're not procrastinating enough, here's another thing that you can do. I'm gonna write that. Maybe it should be a blog. I really think what's interesting is that when you do something small and satisfying, so your laundry, your whatever, or it's getting a like on social media, all of that, those things, you can kind of see why people go, okay, let me start again. writing has been, hard work, mental hard work, no guarantee of reward.
Yeah.
It takes a while to see a tangible result, no matter what level we're at. So there's that. So quite hard work, as opposed to, I'm going to get a really immediate hit of dopamine from jumping on social media and writing, you know, a sort of a 200-word rant on something that people like or laugh at. I mean, you could kind of see why social media in particular is very satisfying, but it's kind of like I feel like it's sort of like, it's like junk food. It's not the true satisfaction of, oh my God, I've just written 1,000 solid words today, which is so great, or I've just typed the end to my manuscript. You know, it's not as that level of beautiful satisfaction, but it is really alluring. You know, and it's, you know, you can kind of see why people go, but I get like a nice sort of warm fuzzy from getting my laundry done, and it's that feeling of satisfaction of a task done. And so I know, like, I am that person. I totally know, but I think that's the challenge, right? It's well, I can get some immediate satisfaction versus, you know, something that might take years.
And I also think it's worth pointing out that for that social media aspect, they literally have teams and teams of psychologists and behavioral scientists working to make us want more of, to stay on those sites longer and to be more involved and get more involved in it. Like that is their whole purpose. So it's not you necessarily being weak. It's actually being a human.
Yes, it's really not. And it's, you know, it's we're so built that way, right? It's like, oh, you know, yummy thing, or nice calming things that makes us feel safe or happy. Of course, we're going to gravitate towards it. Of course, you know, we are only human. It's interesting because I read a tip recently, which I will share with you guys, that to look at your screen time on your phone and see how long you are spending on it every day. And so I did this and was utterly horrified. I really was horrified and went, you know, when you add up the, honestly, for the 4 hours a day, when you add that up over a week, over a year, that's days and days.
I would have thought that was actually really on the low end of the scale, Catherine. Honestly, I would have thought that 4 hours would be what some people would hope to get. I've had friends that have easily spent 8 to 10 hours.
Yeah. Oh, I can believe it. Easy. I can totally believe it. I was just horrified because I went, when I just did the math and went, that's like, I'm quite busy, and that's 4 hours of my day that isn't really unproductive.
That could be all your words for the day, couldn't it?
Those 2 hours.
Maybe a couple of days.
Is that just really social media, or is that just using your phone though? Is that?
Phone, but I have to say most of them using my phone is, I would say, calls and texts to people, you know, I don't know, 15 minutes max. So maybe half an hour. So I would say there's still a sizable chunk of that is scrolling.
Yeah.
And checking things. I'm going, why do I need to keep checking? What's
going to
happen? So it's like, honestly, my tip for getting around that, and I do this myself sometimes, and certainly now that I've discovered the four to five hours, and sometimes it's more than 4 hours, I've gone, you need to just put it down. So I read two really great tips about it. One is to put a rubber band around your phone, or like a hairband or something around your phone, so there's just a physical impediment to just doing that. So there's that, which I thought was interesting. But I think for people that are going, oh, I keep trying to start writing and then I do half an hour, then I'm pulled away to look at Facebook or whatever, is have all of that stuff shut down on your computer. It's just too tempting to be able to click on it and go, what's going on there? Plus, if you're getting notifications, shut those down. And then my big thing though is like, use social media because it is fun. It's not like it's not fun to poke around. Use it as a treat at the end. So that's your reward. So you've done your word count, your page count, your how many, you know, hours or minutes that you want to spend writing, and then go, great, no, I'm going to check all that, I'm going to have that, but do it at the end. And I think that's what works for me. Like, I go, no, you have to shut down everything. And for some people that are so, you know, absolutely welded onto their phone, I think you're going to have to put your phone in another room. But it's, I know for some people that's really anxiety making.
I've seen reports talking about how even just having your phone sitting there, not even doing anything with it, is actually so disruptive to your productivity, because you're constantly going, oh, I better check. Oh, I bet you it's taking
you out.
So there's even just having it there, but you don't use it, take it into another room is such a good piece of advice. Like it actually is.
I am so absorbing that piece of information you've just given me. I am totally going to do that now. Like, because I quite often forget. In fact, where is my phone now? It's in another room because I didn't want it to bother us. But it's normally it sits in my office. So I'm going to absolutely start doing that. Yeah. But I think the whole reward at the end of the work is such a different type of satisfaction, a little bit more. I mean, I literally, when I finish some work, because I'm like everyone, there's a bazillion things I'd rather do than sit looking at a screen all day, you know, trying not to be crap at writing. You know, there's quite a few things I like doing outside of that. So I would, you know, I really do go, what's the reward? And I literally give myself a pat on the shoulder when I've finished my day and going, well, you really moved your project forward. That's great. Well done, you. And that's what I do. And it's such a weird, corny thing to do. But I actually think it's really great, because I love that feeling. And you guys know that feeling of when you go, I've just moved my story forward by this amount of words or these amount of pages. It's just the best feeling in the world.
Mm-hmm. I put a timer on usually. If I'm
I finish
my words, so I'll go, okay, I'm going to put a timer on for 15 minutes. You can check Facebook once that's done, back to work.
Nice.
But you see, you've got the willpower to get back to, like, you're good about meeting their timers restrictions, Wendy.
So
other people would say, well, nobody's here, they can't see. Still on my phone.
Just another few minutes.
I work 2 quarter hours or half hours. It's quarter past, I'll go, okay, you got till half past. I don't do odd in between. That's my ego brain doesn't work if I'm going 20 past or 25 past. For me, it has to be on the hour, quarter or half or three quarter. Nothing in between.
That's good. Nice boundaries. I like that. That's cool.
It is. It's great. And it's so nice finding the time chunk that works for you. Like, I'm pretty good at, I like to do an hour. Like, that's for me. Like, if I do 2 hours, awesome. But I like to do an hour, then cup of tea, you know, or hour, walk around, stretch, go and do something, and then come back another hour. That works really well for me. But also, I should say that when I'm working on deadline for something I've been commissioned to write, that's one thing, because there's a different stick, right? There's an actual literal real world stick going, you kind of have to, and I've already worked out how much work I will have to do each day to make that deadline, right? And so there's that, but then there's my work that, you know, is the unpaid, it's my projects that I love that I want to do, like my plays are like this. So I love it. My, you know, the short story I wrote for that anthology, same thing, love it. It's, want to do it, but that's a whole level of discipline, a whole different level of discipline. And I think a lot of people that don't have deadlines, I totally get why that's challenging. I find it challenging. But that's when I employ, like you, Wendy, I go, right, what's the time on it? And I generally go on my to-do list, which is sitting like right here. I go, I've got to do 2 hours, and I time block. So I've got to do 2 hours today on insert project. And if I've done that, I'm really chuffed with myself, actually. I'm really pleased.
Yeah.
You know, people have busy lives.
Just for those that are new to the term, could you just explain about time blocking?
Oh, yeah. Like, time blocking is simply going, what are the tasks I'm doing? And then you attach amount of time to it. And you go, great. So when you look at, so this is really great for people that are working on lots of different things. And I don't mean creative things necessarily, but they're juggling a lot. And so they will go, great. Over my day, there's all these things I have to do. And because I often, I'm taking a little side detour. I often find that when I'm really busy and I've got a lot on, and this is family, you know, work, all sorts of stuff, I will get quite overwhelmed, and I'll look at my to-do list and go, there's like 5 things. They all need my attention. Yeah. I just can't choose which one to do first. So I find time blocking really works. So I will go, I've got to do 2 hours on that. I'm going to do an hour on that. I'm going to spend half an hour on that. And so when I finish that time, then I can go, great. Now you can move on. You've moved everything forward. But it's a horrible thing of apparently multitasking, very bad for your productivity.
Yeah.
Like trying to do like everything in like 5 minutes and be across everything. Look at me doing, I'm miming it out. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Miming it. But it's it's really bad for your productivity to have a whole lot of things open and trying to be across your emails, your socials, your blah, 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 and your various work and your documents all at once. Apparently very poor. So I time block because it helps me go, great, I'm focusing, and which is the key, singularly on this project for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And this project or task might be you need to write that email. So, or you need to check emails. And so I'll have in there, you know, check emails 15 minutes or whatever. And yeah. Your day is just blocked out in chunks of time. And it kind of calms the nerves, I found, because I go, great, everything's being attended to, so you can just mm-hmm. calm down. You're getting to everything, and it's time, and everything gets its time.
Yeah. Mm. That email
was a very long-winded explanation, but I hope it made sense.
Totally get it.
The email one is a big one because you have it on your desktop, and every time it pings, you answer, you look at it and check it. No, don't do that. Anyone who's doing that, stop. Mm. Like you want to do exactly what Catherine's just said and block out 15 minutes and go and check it at a certain time in the day. And the rest of the time, try not to have it on even, or get rid of the notifications.
Yeah, well, I don't have a notification for emails on my laptop or my phone. Mm. I just will go and check, and I put myself, I had to. As I say, look, I'm saying all this from the experience of being a terrible procrastinator. I had to put myself on a wee email diet because I mean, this is ridiculous. I'm checking it every 5 minutes. And it's not as if I, like, this will be a huge surprise to you all. I'm not like running the UN. Like, it's not like
really. No lives are at stake if you don't check your email.
No animals were harmed. I mean, you know, there's, come on, how important can any of the emails I'm getting be? And, of course, occasionally there will be one, but that's okay because I have got my little, I try to check my emails maybe 4 times a day. So first thing, obviously, which is great, and then I'll do a little bit of admin, and then I will move off that, go and do something else, and then probably check around about lunchtime, something like that. I really try to stick to that. Mm-hmm. I don't always manage it, and I catch myself just drifting back to my inbox and have to give myself a bit of a talking to. So, yeah.
I find that if I've got a lot to do, I'm not productive, and so far as I can't write. So I'm probably a little bit like Cher. If the washing needs folding, then I think she's a little bit like me in so far as we both was like, we've got to get that washing folded before we can be creative.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, it's the clutter. I cannot work in clutter or chaos.
Same.
So, I mean, I'm not talking about going around and dusting everything because that's silly. But, you know,
we all have our limits.
Exactly. But what I can see, if I've got a clean desk, and you laugh because my desk is a mess today, but, you know, if I've got a clean desk, then I can sit and work. If I've got everything I need beside me, then I can do everything I need to do.
Yeah.
But if I'm constantly thinking, oh, I don't have that pen, or I don't have my diary, or I don't, you know, I'm just like up and down like a blooming.
Yeah. But I think you've got to make what works for you work, right? Because I can work in chaos without much.
Mm.
I mean, and literally often do, but it's if that is a bother for you, then obviously sort it out. But it's like you'll be, you know, there'll be other things that, so that's I would say that's essential for you, isn't it? So that's essential for your process. But there's probably non-essential things that you do that are
lots of those.
So, yeah, definitely.
I understand it. I can work in chaos, but it's a mental chaos that I don't like. Like I couldn't check my emails first thing. I have to write first. I've discovered that like I am most productive if I get down and just write for as long as I can first before I start doing anything else, before I check emails, before I fill my brain with any other information. So
I'm thinking I might shift and try that because I'm pretty good at going with the time blocking works for me. So I'll go, I know I've got my writing time scheduled, you know, so then I can relax about it and know it's there and I'll do it. When you said that, I kind of went, oh, that sounds so dreamy, actually. Mm. That sounds really nice.
We get up, all of us, and write together in the morning.
It's freeing because, you know, your work is done. And even if you come back to it, even if you need think, oh, well, I could do a bit more on that because it's fresh in my mind and blah, 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 you can stay and do it, or you can come back to it because now you've got a place to start from.
Yeah, what a great idea.
And your words are down. You know, get your words. Trudy sends a text out at 6:38. And I'm just like, no, not exactly. Buzz, and I'm just like, oh, that's Trudy. I have to get up. But, like, it's great, you know.
Mm-hmm. How amazing. What a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know, and the busy brain and the busyness of our lives is just phenomenal, isn't it? It's so tricky. And I really get that there's for a lot of people that don't have, like, a real-life pressing deadline, that logically you're going, but this thing I want to do, this writing lark, is, you know, doesn't necessarily make me money. It's not necessarily helpful for my career. It's not doing anything for me in a sort of a kind of a crass way. You know what I mean? It's not seemingly a thing I absolutely have to do in the scheme of life.
Yeah.
So it's really, I can so see why everything else suddenly becomes much more important. But then my only counter to that really is, but it's important to you. So, and you can't ignore that, as we know what happens there, don't we, readers? You know, if you ignore it, exactly. You just get really miserable and sad. So it's stressed about it. And then that tips into bitterness, which we don't care for. No, so, you know.
No. Avoid the bitterness if you have the dream, right now.
If you have the dream of it being anything more than a hobby or something that you do in your spare time, if you don't push that forward in any way whatsoever, then it will never become a reality.
That's right. That's right.
And if you can live with that, that's fine. But
trying to form habits too, I think, is really good. You know, that can help with procrastination a lot.
Oh, definitely.
You know, make it a job, make it whatever it needs to be, but form that habit so that you then do it. You know,
prioritize it. Yeah, I think. Writing at night is quite difficult for me. Especially these days, I'm just far too tired. I'm sure it works for some people. I'm sure some people work till. In fact, we know of a very famous author, a friend of ours, who could work till the wee hours of the morning.
Yeah,
then get up late, and that's her process, and that suits her. But if I had to do my work at night, I know it wouldn't happen, or it wouldn't be good, or whatever. So I think that's very important to know how you function.
Yeah. But also, isn't this doing a little bit of gentle self-analysis and going, right, what works for me? And being really honest, you know, what works in my life as it currently is, and what works for me as a person? You know, if you know that you're that type of person that will really, really flourish between sort of, I mean, I know someone at the minute who's getting up at 5:30 because they've got three kids, so they're going smaller. So they're going, great, I'm going to write between 5:30 and 7, and that's the time I write and makes that work. I know somebody who, I mean, I have people who work at night. I could never be one of those people that writes till 1 in the morning.
No.
I just know myself. And I also know that I respond, and what I know about myself is I respond really well to reward. So, you know, I'm going, great, that works for me. I don't care how pathetic and childish that sounds. Yeah. I'm going with it because that works for me.
Yeah.
You know,
why not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It hurts no one.
Exactly.
I think starting out, it's tough to new authors. I think, you know, like for the more established ones, I think it's a job, and you know, we know what we have to do to get from A to B. Yeah. But I think it's tough. You hear the new writers saying, I haven't been able to finish my book, or I'm having issues with this, or rah rah rah, and just second guessing themselves constantly.
And that's
a learned process too. Get it down, get the words down.
Yeah. You know, oh, look, draft down. You're so right. It really is, and I think there's probably, the world is probably full of half written plays, novels, screenplays. Do you know it will be?
Oh,
Because it's and you can see why it's tough, right? Because we've all been through it. It's that thing. I mean, I just honestly, when I was younger, I wrote about this in my book, for years, I would go, my New Year's resolution every year was write more and start something, finish something, blah, blah, blah. Those years just rolled by.
Yeah.
I just burned so much time, and I was absolutely procrastinating. But it is really tricky, and because it's not just the getting to grips with your own inner game around it, and your mindset and your fear about what might happen if you finish or don't finish or whatever, or if it fails, all of that stuff. There's also the understanding that, as you quite rightly say, Wendy, it's just getting stuff down. Like, the, you know, I'm very fond of the rough draft, or the vomit draft, as people often call it in film and TV land, in book land as well, I don't know, but it's getting that down it's such a great feeling. It doesn't have to be perfect. And it's just, I mean, it's that thing of discipline and work, you know, and turning up. And what you bring to it mindset-wise is all I'm doing is moving this forward rather than, oh, I have to finish it and it's huge. It's like I'm climbing Everest. You know, it just would just kind of feel like that.
Yeah.
And I like to say to people that are really anxious about finishing stuff, I go, look, what's the worst thing that's going to happen when you finish it? And ask them that question and get them to answer it for themselves and go, well, what is the worst thing that's going to happen? And then my second, you know, ancillary question is, so if that happened, is it going to kill you? What do you think you'll do? How will you recover from the thing that happens? And sometimes the thing that happens is it's really successful. And that comes with its own little bunch of hooks as well, you know. So it's just interesting territory, isn't it? Like, I really think it is. But for me, it's like when I work with new writers, I'm very much all about just be really firm about what it is that you're trying to write. So in terms of the what it is in essence, like, what is it? Is the goal that you've set for yourself achievable given your skill level, your craft knowledge, your time, you know, the time you've got to do it? And I think often new people, because they don't know, will go, oh, I've got this lofty, you know, gargantuan Everest-sized goal. And you go, what a huge surprise that you lost your nerve and fell over after trying to crack it within 6 months. It's a bit like going to a sort of a night course in a high school to learn kung fu and then being really annoyed after the first 6 weeks you haven't got a black belt. I mean, it's like,
come on.
You know, so it's getting really clear about whether you've got the goal, you know, really making sure that the story is solid so you know exactly what it is that you're writing. And then it's just turning up step by step, you know, it's that. And wrestling along the way with the, it might be terrible, it might be good, it might fail, it might, people might laugh, you know, all of that stuff, the demons that come when you're working on something, particularly something sizable. Absolutely. I mean, I think people can start off with great gusto and enthusiasm and then go, gosh, this is really hard. And why am I doing this when there might just be laughter and rejection at the end? I mean, God, who would sign up for this?
And there's not that many people that do it. I mean,
yes,
we know a lot of people that do it. But what I'm saying is, it's, I've said this many times before, but it's not like you're doing an apprenticeship or like a million other people. This is really different. So you can't just chat to someone in your family about it or, you know, like you're actually putting yourself out to do something different.
And it's deeply personal, actually. No matter what you're writing, it's deeply personal. You know, because I, you know, obviously because I've been writing horror recently, I've been going, you know, there's part of me that goes, what do people think when they read your horror? And I mean, not about me, but generally any horror writer, you know, what do they think? And same with people that write erotica. Like I go, you know, there must be a little bit of that in absolutely everything. It's deeply personal, even though it's nothing to do with you or your life. It's still personal because you've put your thoughts and worldview into the public arena, right? And it's challenging. And, you know, and not everyone does it. Not everyone does it because you need a degree of bravery to go, oh, hey, I've got something that is worth saying or listening or, you know, being listened to. I think that's challenging. And I often think, and actually I open my book by saying when you set off to be a writer and you start, you don't, no one sits you down and goes, hey, these are the shit things that are going to happen. And here are the things that you would be really wise to develop, like resilience. Like a really clear understanding of where you're going and what you're going to do if you don't get there in the first instance, and really good understanding of what you need to help you maintain momentum. All of, and everyone who's at all the different levels that we're all at, you know, we all need different things. But no one really sits you down and goes, well, you strap in for a roller coaster. You know, this is, it's never super plain sailing and easy. For anyone, I do, you know, it's just not easy. It's just not an easy thing to do. And I think creating art is just not easy. In a different way than digging a ditch is not easy. You know, it's just, it's different.
You said that it's a little bit brave. I actually think it takes a lot of bravery to actually, not just write the book, but actually put yourself out there when it's finished and try and get it and get it published and do whatever with it. Like, it's actually takes a lot to kind of stand up and go, look, this is this thing I did. Everyone come forth and read it and maybe judge me.
Love
That's
it.
Awesome. Love that. You know, you've got to have that.
Especially as writers, they're introverts, right?
Yeah.
Except, you know what? I'm not. So it's like I'm not an introvert, but same shenanigans, you know, same nonsense. And I know quite a few writers that aren't introverts as well. I know lots that are. But it's the same kind of nonsense, really. Mm. And there's that, I mean, you know, we haven't even talked about, and nor will we, because this is about procrastination, but the whole process of now I have to promote what I've written and you know, my thing that I've created, just, you know, I mean, really.
Like, I've finished the book. Give me a break.
Yeah. It's like, it's done.
That was the hard bit.
Yeah. And now I have to stand up in front of everybody. You know, I mean, it's, talk about the roller coaster. It's a lot.
And it changes actually through your career as well, because I think writing that first book is perhaps the hardest and the easiest thing you have to do in your career. It's hard to get that book finished. Once you do and you get more, there's more things to do.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good point. I mean, because you just get better at, well, you get better at writing, obviously, but you get better at the other stuff too. Like, you get better at being resilient and receiving feedback and receiving the nonsense stuff that happens, you know, as soon as you're in the public eye. You know, it's just that you get better at it. And I've got much, I have to say, when I look at myself now and I look at myself in my, let's say, 30s, I would, it was just, you know, a mere moment ago. I
don't think, just last week.
Well, thank you, Wendy, you're my best friend. Is that, like, basically, it's, I had to go, wow, you are so thin skinned. And of course I was a human being, really thin-skinned, really, you know, would easily be upset, didn't have the resilience that I've got now. And now I can go, you know what, failure is going to happen when you become an artist of any sort. It just is. It comes with the territory, and as is rejection. So there's going to be things that just don't happen for you, and you don't win every race. You know, that's life. And it's the same for everybody, not just artists, but I think, a lot of people, I mean, I just deal with a lot of younger writers that I go, it's like, why has no one ever said to you, you know, this failure isn't going to kill you. This is just part of being a creative person. It just is. I mean, being a creative person and not putting yourself in public, absolutely, plenty of people just very happy expressing their creativity, never trying to sell what they make or put what they make out to the world. How wonderful, so great. But, you know, if you're someone that does want to put yourself out into the world, then get used to failure, which is, you know, there's your fridge magnet.
Get used to failure, you. Yeah. I'm not sure that one's going to catch on.
I'm thinking no.
But you do have to fail to succeed, right?
Of course.
Exactly. It's a learning experience, isn't it? Like, maybe not failure, but not doing as well as you expected.
That's right.
You can only improve.
Yes. Well, I honestly think that I could write this book now, like my nonfiction book now, because I couldn't have written it probably even 5 years ago. I certainly couldn't have written it 10 years ago, but I know exactly that. It's the way you think your life is going to go and where it goes. Is sometimes really challenging, like really challenging.
Absolutely. You think back to when you first started, right to now.
How much you thought you knew.
I remember publishing my first book with Random House and thinking, well, that's it. Then I'm going to be just sweet.
I'm going to be famous now.
Just going to roll in and I just sit back and, you know.
Yep.
Not so much. That didn't happen.
Not so much, right?
Yeah. I know.
In a different way, though.
And in TV land, there's a thing that I don't know whether it's true in the other countries, but certainly it feels like here, and I've heard a couple of people say this, is that you win an award and the phone stops ringing, and it's certainly been my experience. So you would think exactly, you go, oh, I won this award, so obviously people are going to want to work with me, and it's just crickets.
Because they assume everyone else wants to work with you now. They assume that you're so busy because you're. You're so popular.
I don't know what it is, but it is definitely a thing. It's sort of like, oh
wow.
So you think you're kind of a You said, oh, great, so that's a good stake in the ground. And as to your comment, Wendy, things don't just roll in. It's really interesting.
I think actresses, actors and actresses, it's the same thing, isn't it? Because often they will still have to go out and audition for a role, even though they've just won an Emmy, you know, and you know, could be anything.
They haven't
latched onto them straight away. Life is bizarre.
Like my friend Nick Ward, who I co-wrote that play with that I mentioned earlier, when I said to him, so he knew that I had won an award, and he texted me a congratulations text, and it basically went, congratulations, mate, that's so, so awesome. Now you can just sit back and wait for the phone not to ring. And I went, yeah, and it made me laugh so much because I went, that's kind of true, and that's exactly what happened.
Oh, wow. Oh, isn't that funny? It's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
Just when you think you got it sorted, you don't.
Be like starting every time.
You heard it here, folks. Don't win awards. That's not the way to do it.
Well, it might be different. It might be different in the land of books. It may well be very, very different. I'm sure it is. I just don't know why it's not the case in TV land.
Yeah.
But luckily, I straddle a whole bunch of lands. So there we go.
So you're
fine. Yeah. Really okay.
Wow. And is that something that you attribute your success to in terms of your being able to be a working writer, is that you straddle so many different areas of writing?
Definitely. And I think there's another path that I often think of. I wish I'd gone down that path, which is the pure artist path, where I don't do anything except one thing. And there's part of me that goes, oh, you know, you've possibly made some mistakes in the past where you've tried to do too much and you really should have just focused on one thing. And a lot of very successful people in all types of mediums do really well when they do that. So I think in New Zealand it's quite tricky just to be a purist about what you do. I think for a lot of people, most people I know have a side hustle of some sort, or they've got a part-time job, or they've got a, you know, partner that supports them or something, particularly if they're writing. And so I think that was a by necessity choice.
Yeah.
And also I have to say, on another level, I just love writing. So I don't really mind what it is I'm writing, if you know what I mean. Like I just, I mean, I obviously like the project, obviously, but I don't mind what form it takes. I enjoy all forms of writing. So I'm a bit of a, I don't know, I think I'm a bit of a flibbertigibbet that way. And I keep thinking, oh, just really focus. And so at some point I wrote down all my projects and went, I'm going to not live long enough to finish half of these, which was somewhat sobering. Yeah. And I'm just literally not going to live long enough. So that's that. So that made me go, right, you have to focus down a bit. And I think that's one of my big flaws, actually, as a writer, is I find it really hard to focus and just do one thing for a long time.
Yeah.
But there's all levels of success, aren't there?
That is right.
Yeah.
And there's the pleasure, which is, you know, the absolute pleasure of the small win, you know, where something good has gone your way and it's just, you know, it's not an Emmy or, you know, a Pulitzer, but it is just wonderful. And you've got to just grab those things and really, really enjoy them, which is great. Mm.
So you said something at one point, you said, I just love the writing. So what do you say to a person who's, feels the same, like, I just love the writing, I want to write, but it's still not writing, they're really just not writing, what do they do?
They just need to start. And I would say to them, start in a really safe, easy way. So, like, you know, something like Morning Pages, you know, the Julia Cameron Morning Pages concept, that type of thing. Or, you know, depending on the individual, go to a workshop and just start, or do like a just a little tiny little workshop that is something like, you know, idea generation, something like that. I mean, I teach creativity is one of the things I teach, and I speak about that as well. And I have to say, I used to teach a workshop at the Auckland Writers Festival regularly, which was a creativity workshop. And it was really about getting that engine started. Mm-hmm. And there was somebody who I won't name, even though I'm so proud of him, who came up to me afterwards. This is about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, came up to me afterwards and went, I thought I had stopped writing. Hugely intelligent, creative guy. Said, I thought I'd stopped writing. I've been so depleted by my job and blah, 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 blah. And this has made me realize I can still write. And it was as simple as going to a little short workshop and having someone throw some provocations at you.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Trudy, you've seen my creative writing workshop because I did it at the Romance Wrote Conference mm-hmm. ages ago.
Yeah.
So where we met, actually. So mm-hmm. it's that. And it's, I think, it's those small things. It's like finding the pleasure in it. So mm-hmm. if you like going to workshops and doing it, that sort of thing, do that. If you like being on your own, you know, do something online and then just start. And it's just nonsense. Like, just jot stuff down. Just play with ideas. I think that is a really nice way in. And go, what is... you know, what is hooking you? Like, what is the thing that you're really liking? What's the idea that pops up that you go, oh, there's something in that quite like that? And I think it's just, and you start in private. Like, you start in private. No one else sees. And so I remind those people constantly, no one's going to see anything until you choose. You're in control of this. Mm. You know, you're really, you're just sitting there wherever you are, doing whatever you're doing, just chipping away at an idea. Mm. You know, playwright Roger Hall once said to me, which I thought was so great, he said, you know, this was years ago, actually, and I had not written a play at that point. And he said to me, you know, ideas for him is, it doesn't matter where you start your play. You're like finding this little germ or little kind of little string that you just, that you find your way into it. And it might be in the middle of the play. It might be the way a character walks. It might be a line of dialogue. It doesn't matter. Just get that kernel down. And then expand. So yeah. It's, I'm really big on the start small, easy, be gentle. You know, you really, I think a mistake some new writers make is doing this proclamation of, I'm going to write my novel, or I'm going to write my whatever, or I'm going to do this. And I go, yeah, but you're not ready and you're too nervous. And they start and they go, oh no, I hate it. I'm not going to do it. So it's just start privately and small mm-hmm. and just go, let's find the idea that I love. So you've got a little mm-hmm. kernel. Expand, find the thing that you love. Go, what's turning me on about this? Like, you know, what is this that I like? And just play with it. And it might be as simple as morning pages, a dream diary, anything that's got you, because I'm a big fan of pen and paper, there's a title, pen and paper. It's, yeah. I think it's a fantasy novel, pen and yeah. paper.
Yeah. Peter Pan.
It's like, just start writing in a notebook. And you know, just jotting down ideas and then going, see which ones feel like you want to keep writing.
It's a great reminder.
Sorry, go ahead.
You go.
I was just going to say about Readsy, Reedsy. They send out a newsletter once a month, I think it is, and they have prompts in there. And some of them are really cool. And it's just saying, they just give you a sentence, write something about blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And it's just practice, I think, getting into that expanding your mind of what that could look like.
That's right.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be the beginning, like you say.
Mm. I think Readsy workshops are great.
Mm.
And, you know, their stuff online is so good. Mm. And I quite often will say to newer writers the same thing, just go and check out and just start. But in terms of someone who really wants to start, is go to a workshop where you are going to be required to write. Like, you don't have to sign up for the 1 year huge creative writing terrifying thing. It can just be turn up for a day or 2 days or whatever it is, and just sit in the back with your journal or your laptop and just start there. And so then you've started. You're actually starting. You've kind of stumbled into a room and suddenly you're writing. Yeah. You know, it's that. It's you know there's this really bizarre thing out there, which is obviously something I need to write about. Of the concept of what being a writer is and what we're all like. And you just go, oh my good Lord, you should meet some. The romance of, you know, the writer life. I get it. It's alluring, but it's not necessarily true. And I think the starting feels like, but to be a proper writer, I have to write a novel or I have to do a 2 year course at a university or I have to whatever. Everyone has got a different path. So that is kind of nonsense. And that definitely is a path for some people, but it's not a path for everybody. And there's plenty of people that have started a different way. It's how you find your way in is down to what you enjoy, I think, what you love doing, what you're comfortable with, really important.
Yep.
And, you know, you guys, some of you have been to my workshops. You know, when I run a writing workshop, I'm like, I don't make anyone share ever. Because I noticeably feel there's always a couple of people in the room that'll be the introverts in the room. I always feel them go, huh, And they I see them relax because they're going, phew, because that's what they were nervous about.
Exactly. Do you know the one thing I wanted to say is it actually what you're talking about is such a good reminder that writing is about the creativity and the kernel of an idea and the and the hook and all those kinds of things. Because I think we can get caught up in the idea that writing is about the word count that you did that day, or writing is how many books you've published that year, or writing is all these other things. And I guess that's a part of it. There's the business side of things. But actually, writing is about creativity. Writing is about kind of expanding ourselves and our words and doing some cool stuff. And maybe that's a big part of what we need to remember.
I think that's true. And also we're creating something from nothing, which is amazing. That's actually phenomenal. And I think you're so right. I think we really get caught up in, so particularly when we're trying to be really productive and, you know, we're smashing out the word count or the page count or whatever. I think it's, if we're busy, because when I think about going on like a really lengthy writing retreat where all I have to do is write, I just about swoon. Like I really do just go, it just sounds so amazing. I'm excited to do that because, you know, we've all got lives of many moving parts. So, you know, I tend to be quite focused and, you know, with the time blocking and go, right, now I'm in writing mode. And I've got lots of muscle memory for that, so I can do it. And that works for me personally. Absolutely isn't going to work for everybody. But I think we do kind of forget because we're sometimes going, well, I've just got to get to that bit. And the idea, the luxury of going, you know what, I'm going to mull for a month on my first chapter and then I'm going to come back to it and do another one. You know, we just don't have that. It just doesn't really seem to be a thing. Or some people maybe do, but, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I like discussing this stuff to go, what shenanigans am I bringing to my own process? And I like, because I talk to many writers, obviously, so it's always interesting. You know, the stupid little voices we've got running around in our heads, unchecked, probably nude. You know, just running around like naughty children.
I just like, that's a different those guys off the Muppet. There was that guy Animal off the Muppet.
Yes, really funny. And you know,
who's my favorite character, Wendy?
Oh, I love Fozzie Bear. I love Fozzie Bear. He's my favorite. But it's that if we don't kind of grab those thoughts and go, right, is that actually true, or I'm just some stupid story I'm telling myself? It's that, which is, this is your inner game stuff, right?
It's a lot of stories.
We do like the stories, don't we? We're writers. Nullify those bad unhelpful stories in our heads.
We've got to make sense of all of the emotions that we feel at various stages in our writing process. And so then we make up a little story about that. And I do this all the time and have to go, hold on, is that actually true or is that just some nonsense? And usually it's some nonsense, you know, but I like to know myself, you know, so I'm going, warts and all, come on. How many times have I said to myself, probably over the last, let's say 20 years, oh, you're just being a dick. But it's a really good thing to say.
Oh, thank you so much, Catherine. Now we're winding up the interview. We're coming towards the end. And I just wondered if there was one just little nugget of gold that you could give our listeners to leave them with that's just going to help them kick that procrastination in the butt and help them be productive writers going forward.
Right. I think it is that question about being really honest with yourself around why am I not prioritizing my writing at the moment? You might like to say today, like, why am I not doing it? You know, why am I not prioritizing it today? And also another little thing I think is helpful, sounds really silly, is put what you want to do writing wise over any day at the top of your to-do list. An awesome therapist said this to me and years ago, and I went, this is so true. The to-do list never ends. So that's my little bit of gold. It's true. It doesn't. So if you are battling, your dear little battler, through your to-do list before you get to your writing, it's no. It's never going to end. That to-do list is always going to be.
Be like the Spa Girls and get up at 6:30 and write.
I'm so inspired by that.
Awesome.
It took me over 50 years to learn that about the to-do list. Honestly, I wish I knew. If somebody had told me that 30 years ago, because that was one that really feels like it's I've only just kind of got that, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm the same. I wish someone had told me all of the stuff I've been saying to you, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Like, it's not really something I was even aware of. And I think when you do a little bit of investigation into your own shenanigans, it can be kind of unpleasant. Like, who wants to do that? Revealing, but it is so, so useful for you to go, this is what I'm doing. This is how I'm getting in my own way. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking. That's that.
Sorry, we keep going. We tried to make it.
So I just want to reiterate that Catherine has a book called The Productive Writer. Which covers this and more.
And more, yes. Just got the hard copy in, actually. It just turned up yesterday, which is really great. Cute. So, it is a dinky, gorgeous little bedside read, or it's probably a bit big for a stocking stuffer, but, it's great.
And how can people buy that, Catherine?
They can buy that from Gumroad, which is a sales platform, but also if you go to my if you go to Beginner's Guide Writing Workshop website, you will see a banner there about it, and you can click on that and it will take you through to the sales space. And there's an ebook as well, so you can buy it as ebook or hard copy. We're not quite on Amazon, etc., but we'll be soon. So just doing local at the minute, especially for the hard copy, because you know, postage. So
That's cool. Brilliant. Make sure that all those links are in the show notes too for anybody listening to this. If you're on your podcast app or if you're on YouTube, there's links in the show notes.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. It's been so great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. And where can we be found, Char?
Well, we can be found at spargirlspodcast.com. We're on YouTube at spargirlspodcast and all podcast platforms, and Patreon at spargirlspodcast if you'd like to come and join the tribe for our shenanigans.
Fantastic. Yes. Such a great podcast. Such a great podcast, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming back. Appreciate it.
I know. Well, you know, I thought because of my last, you know, debacle, I've been banned. No, there wasn't a debacle. I'm sorry.
Listen to that episode just in case.
So hand on heart, we've never ever banned anybody, just so. And you're definitely not going to be the first one.
Very good.
So thank you.
I'm just going to say challenge accepted.
Now you've done it, Char. I'm trying to end it. Thank you to all of our listeners for joining us for another episode of the Spargirls podcast. We'll see you again next week. But for now, farewell.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.